Hello and welcome to the first Total Football Analysis magazine podcast of the new European season. I'm Chris Darwin and today I'm joined by someone who's been a head coach in MLS as well as in the international game, Anthony Hudson. Anthony, thank you for joining us today and giving up some of your time.
Hi Chris, hope you're well.
Yeah, very well. I'm really pleased that the real stuff's getting back underway again. I hate pre-season friendlies and all that sort of all that side of it. So it was good to be able to have some proper football to start analysing again. Anthony, before we really get going, I mean, a lot of people know who you are, obviously, but there'll be some of our listeners that may be not too familiar with your work. So tell us a little bit more about who you are and how you ended up in the position that you're in today.
Yeah, so I've you know, probably as a going back as, you know, a young kid, really, I was born into the game in that my dad played football. He was played at Chelsea and Arsenal and Stoke and played for England. And so I was sort of brought up around the game. And then I played up until sort of early 20s, and I didn't quite make the level as a player. And I sort of fell into coaching. And I think when I started coaching, you know, early 20s, it's something that I just fell in love with. And I was just determined as a young person to become the best coach I could be. And then ever since then, it's, my coaching pathway, although it really hasn't been planned or prepared this way, it's just taken me to many different places. Coaching in the USA, in the USL, which is the second division over here. And, starting as an assistant coach and then moving in to become a head coach at 27. Then back to the UK, had a spell in the conference, and then shortly after that, going into international football with Bahrain in the Middle East, and then after 3.5 years, moving to New Zealand and doing a campaign with New Zealand, which was both were amazing experiences, and going through Asian Cups and qualifiers and World Cup qualifiers and Confederations Cups. It was just an amazing, amazing experience. And then recently having a year and a half in MLS was also, again, another experience. And it's one where it's my coaching, my career has taken me all around the globe. And I think I'm at the stage now where I'm ready to stop traveling as much, to be honest.
So where do you consider home now then? Obviously being from England, but having spent a lot of time in the States, where do you consider home?
Well, look, I mean, all my family are from London and they're from England. And I grew up as a kid going to watch Chelsea. And then we spent part of my life up in Stoke. My dad played up there. And I have to say, when I was up at Stoke as a kid, that was probably where I first really fell in love with the game. And just the passion of football. And I just remember going to watch Stoke playing the old Victoria Ground, and the part we used to sit in was right next to the Boothen end, the big stand behind the goal. And I've just never heard an atmosphere, you know, those Stoke fans, I've never heard an atmosphere like it. And as a young kid, it was just amazing. You literally fall in love with the game, and you just want to, all you want to do is play in front of those fans and be a player, and they're just amazing fans. So, look, I've spent a lot of time in England, and what I didn't mention, I was actually born in America. My dad came and played for Seattle Sounders. So I was born here, and I was only here for a year. One thing's for sure, England's my home. Like, it's where all my family are. But I've loved my time in America. I've loved my time in MLS. The league, for anyone who's been out here or seen the growth, I mean, it's growing so quickly, so much. And, even in the time I've been here, the amount of money that's been invested into it, the amount of players, money that's been invested into players, new stadiums, you know, they're breaking record crowds every week, getting 60, 70,000 to some games. And so I think the league is really growing out here. So it's an exciting place to be.
No, it sounds like it. I mean, MLS is something that we're following a lot more closely in the magazine as well, in the last year. I'd say the sort of players that they're attracting, the sort of the way the game's evolving itself out there is fascinating. It's fascinating to see. So, Anthony, we're going to be talking a lot about analysis, obviously, in this podcast, and how that fits into your coaching toolkit. Now, working out the sort of the timelines you've been talking about in terms of your coaching career so far, you must have seen already the use of tactical analysis and analysis tools change dramatically in the sort of the time of your career so far.
Yeah, definitely. I think, to be honest, I've been quite fortunate, really, in the fact that, you know, I never had a name as a player, so I was never going to walk into a coaching job or a big coaching job or a manager's job. So, you know, ever since I started, I've spent a lot of time traveling around, you know, all around England, Holland, Spain, France, wherever it may be. I've been over to South America, and I've just spent as much time with as many coaches as possible, studying and watching and best practice and over time you start sort of gravitating towards coaches that you really admire and respect, and that probably have similar values and principles about the game, and also about how you work. You know, you see certain managers work and it's similar to what you believe, so you spend more time watching them. So over the years, your sort of education gets streamlined, and I think there's been a few managers that have really stuck out to me in that sense. And so I think that's a big part of my development in analysis has come from that. And then you start using it in your own environment, and you start basically, because I think there's no shortage of information nowadays. There's no shortage of people offering you support and you know, resources to be able to provide information. I think that's going to keep evolving, and the way in which we get that information is getting better and better. The way we, you know, the information now is so much better for players to see and take on board. Is, you know, that's only going to keep improving. I think the key for us coaches is then to figure out what's relevant for your, you know, our own environment, what the players can take on, and when, and the art of just you know, communicating that and using it at the right time and using it to your benefit in everything that you need to sort of back up and present to the players and explain to the players and review and etc. So I'm definitely a big believer in it. It's something I've had to use over the years. I've worked in the Middle East where we've had a translator, and you know, the use of analysis and video and, you know, statistics were even more important then. And I think when you're working in different cultures, this, you know, and you're going to new clubs and you're, you know, implementing new styles of play, you know, the use of analysis is so important.
Have you found over the last sort of decade or so that then that players have become more open to various forms of analysis because it's been very much in their upbringing a lot more than it would have been for the players of an older generation?
I think I think nowadays, in general, all players are open to it. I haven't really, you know, that few, and by the way, this is probably developed really quickly in a short space of time. Probably 4 or 5 years ago, you would get the odd players here and there, senior players that were reluctant to see it and reluctant to or not as open to it. But I think in general, players nowadays, whether they're senior or young players, they're all very much open to it. And I think, like I said before, I think the key is just understanding which players can take on more or less information and which players respond to it. Because that's the thing. I don't think it's a senior player or a younger player thing. I think it's a personality thing. You know, you might get a senior player who loves it and wants as much of it to help drive him and keep him accountable and drive performance. But then you might get a young person that just doesn't work for him. And you might need to use another method. So I think nowadays players are very open to it.
No, that makes a lot of sense, certainly around the personality side of it. Because, I mean, I suppose when I put it into a very basic form of going back to school, for example, you just see the kids around you. Some would learn in different ways. Some like to be shown, some like to do, some like to do it this way, some like to do it that way. And that makes perfect sense. That would be something like this, that there's got to be different ways for different people to be able to get the information that they need and have that learning experience. So yeah, I'm really interested about the States in terms of analysis, Anthony. And the reason I say that is because when I first started sort of thinking about this kind of stuff, Sam Allardyce was said to be a bit of a pioneer about it in the Premier League with Bolton, and he created this big department, and they were doing stuff that it was claimed hadn't been seen in the Premier League before. And Sam Allardyce always seemed to link that back to the time that he spent as a player playing in the USA at a point in his career, and how the States had always been light years ahead of England in terms of different analysis methods. Have you seen much difference between the two countries yourself?
Yeah, I think soccer is a growing game in this country. From what I know, Sam Allardyce, who I think is a fantastic manager, I'm pretty sure that his development in this was actually, you know, taken from American football, maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, maybe the Buccaneers, something like that. So I think actually teams like American football teams and basketball teams, and you know, I've got a little bit of a time off now, and I'm out visiting some American football teams and watching them train. And you know, last year I went to see the Denver Broncos and went to see the Denver Nuggets, the basketball team, and I have to say, I think those teams, American football, basketball, even my time in New Zealand, you know, I used to spend some time watching the All Blacks and the local team there, the Auckland Blues and teams like that. I think those sports actually in certain areas are a little bit more advanced in analysis. And I think probably in some areas, soccer or football has a, you know, a little bit of catching up to do. Now, that's not to say there are certain teams and coaches and clubs out here and even back home in England where they are super advanced and they're doing incredible things. You know, there's a couple of teams out here, a couple of coaches. You got the national team coach here, Greg Berhalter. You got Peter Vermees out here at Kansas City. You know, they're just two names that spring to mind where those guys are doing incredible things. From what I know, they use a huge amount of analysis. Certainly, if you didn't know anything about how they work, when you watch their teams play, they have an incredibly clear style of play. So you get a really clear understanding that those guys work at, you know, a very detailed work. They have a clear way of doing training and playing. So there are some teams out here, but I definitely think some of the other codes use analysis probably better than certain, you know, places in soccer.
So on your travels then, where would you say that the most impressive, and I suppose when I say impressive, it doesn't have to be the best, I guess. It's something that's made you look at something in a different way, maybe. Where's been the best place that you've been in terms of analysis and made you go, now there's something?
Well, I think the analysis side of it, I think it is what it is. I think the information is out there for everyone. I mean, after every single game, everyone's doing analysis of teams and games, and then the more money you have as a club, the more data and more, you know, information you can get, and you can get it in a way that's, you know, to a real top level. I think the other side of it, which I think certain teams and sports are a little bit more different, and maybe a little bit more ahead than football, probably places like, you know, if you look in New Zealand with like the All Blacks, or, you know, rugby, for example. So I think between the two sports, we would both receive the same amount of analysis and information after games, pre-games, on opposition, on our own teams. I think that the slight difference is the sort of the culture of the players, to their approach to learning and their approach to being. It feels to me that in rugby, for example, players are very, very, even more open to learning. And not only are they open to learning, but they are really part of the process of learning. So it's the cultures and the environment in rugby are much more of a two-way back and forth learning environment. You know, the meetings would be, you know, very little, you know, a coach telling this is how we're going to do things. More, this is the information. You know, there's a, I've known plenty of examples where players have got to go away and analyze their own games and come in and report back, you know, on that. You know, players have to go away and analyze a position and come in and report, you know, communicate that to the team and come up with a game plan that's done jointly with the coaches. I mean, these things are, you know, very rare in football, but they're very common in rugby. So I think we all receive the information is there for all of us. I think the key is how we get the information across to the players, and getting the players bought in and getting the players completely on board with that plan. I think that is the key. And of course, with all that information, it's then understanding how much you can get, you know, how you present it and how much you put across to the players.
Yeah, no, definitely. I liked what you said about getting the how in rugby, how they sometimes get the players to come in and actually present to the rest of the team around certain things that they've gone away and learned. Reminded me of something I heard about Dave Bassett at Wimbledon back in the 80s. He insisted that all his players used to go and do the FA coaching badges, not because he wanted them to go off and become coaches, but because he felt it would help them understand the game a lot more. And then when he was conveying tactical information to them, they would be able to understand it quicker than players didn't have their coaching badges and who had gone through that process. And I thought that was quite an interesting sort of take in the 80s, and certainly not something that you hear too often about other clubs doing. And to be fair to Wimbledon, they were doing stuff in the 80s that a lot of clubs weren't doing, which is why they punched above their weight for so long. But
well, I remember in New Zealand, I went to one of the top teams down there. I spent a week down there to watch them train. And I knew the coach very well. He's a really good young coach. And the day I turned up, it was a Thursday before a game on a Saturday. And I came in, I sat in the back of a meeting. And I remember the coach came and sat next to me. The head coach came and sat next to me at the back. And I was wondering, like, when he was going to get up and go and get to the front and take the meeting. And basically, the meeting started, and you got players sat in there, and in the room are, you know, All Blacks and top, the best of the best in the world, in their sport. And they've all, you know, most of them are holding files and pens and papers. And then suddenly the captain gets up, then the assistant captain gets up, and two other players, and basically they go over certain parts of the game plan related to the game on the Saturday. They're talking about the opponents, and they're covering everything from tactics to certain skill set within the positions to then mindset. And then the last player gets up and he starts talking about the mindset. He shows a little visual on the screen about the opposition they're about to play and how they like to intimidate in certain situations when they're on the floor, whatever they like to do. And the guy talks about their mindset, and he talks about a certain thing. He says, look, when this happens, let's just make sure we don't lose eye contact with them. When they get into the head-to-head with them like this, we just stare them because they like to intimidate you. Now, as a coach sat at the back and the head coach sat next to me, like, it was so powerful to hear the players telling their teammates, this is what's going to happen. This is what we're going to do. This is the tactics. This is the technical work we need to work on between now and then. And this is where our minds need to be at. And there was so much more buy-in from the players. And obviously the work had been done from Monday to Thursday with the coaches, but the players took complete ownership of the game plan. And that's just something that I remember sat there and I thought to myself, I would love to be able to do this in football. And it's actually something that I have actually tried, you know, little bits here and there, drip feeding it in and trying to, we've definitely done that in my previous jobs, and it's something that I'll keep trying to develop. But that's where I'm giving you an example of where I think some of the codes, you know, have analysis and information and data, but probably use it in a different way.
I love the sound of that. That does sound like the holy grail almost for football in some ways to be able to get to, because it's just that ownership, that buy-in, that just the responsibility levels of it as well. And when it comes from within, it's fantastic. I always find a lot of huge potential business and sport crossovers in these conversations, because again, my background was sales and marketing before I moved over into football media. And again, that sort of thing is sort of thing we used to do on the in, on the sales floor and stuff, where you would get one of the up and coming account managers to actually explain his account and how he was going to manage his account, rather than the sales manager, me in that situation, telling him how he was going to manage his account. Because if he's come up with it and stuff, and it, there's just more ownership and everything. Because there's always, no matter how the world evolves, there's always going to be that sort of slightly hierarchical thing where you, if your manager's telling you at any level, there's still going to be that little element there. And it only takes a tiny seed of doubt for it not to be as good as it could be. But if you've been part of that process yourself, then you're on board, typically. That'd be amazing to see. It'd be amazing to see. But no, that's amazing. So Anthony, if we could go into sort of like a working week for you then, really, and then look at the different parts of analysis that you'd be going through in a working week, and we'll call it a game week where you've got a match coming up. What sort of amount of time are you spending on the pre-match analysis? What amount of time are you spending on the post-match analysis? And what are the different sort of sections within that?
Well, I think when we always have a really clear process that starts, it's ongoing throughout the week, where you have certain people on your staff analysing your next opponents. Not your next opponents, the week after. And they're looking at, whether it be the fourth or the fifth or the third game out of that opponent. You have another staff member doing the second or third, and then you have your assistant doing the second to last. And then by the time that team plays at the weekend, that will be a game that I watch. So what will happen is you'll finish your last game. We finish our last game the next day. I will analyze our game. And out of that game, I will come up with all the things that we need to focus on improving during the next week, all the things that were really positive from the game. And out of that information then will get sent to my analyst. The next day, my assistant would tend to do a presentation to me on everything that he's gathered from all the assistants together. So they will have met on the Friday before our Saturday game to talk about our next opponents. And the assistants will present to my assistant, and he will gather all that information and make a presentation for me on the Monday. Out of that meeting and having reviewed our game and gone over the next opponents, we will then come up with a game plan. The game plan, when we like to call it, you know, we boil it down to a one pager where we put everything on it, and then we boil it down. Then from this one pager, we have in there everything that we need to really focus on in terms of stopping the opposition play, and everything that we need to focus on in terms of how we're going to break them down. And then from there, and using the review from the last game, we then plan the week. And that will consist of working back from Saturday, the next game, and looking at what we need to do in training, when we need to do it, the meeting, the videos that we're going to present to the players, and when, the messaging throughout the week that we need to talk about, the meetings we're going to have in terms of with who, what type of players, with groups, with the whole team, when we're going to have them. And that will include everything from the tactical plan, the technical work we need to do. And of course, like I mentioned with the rugby situation, the mindset as well. So we will come out of that meeting and we will have the week set in terms of all our training, in terms of all our meetings, and with who and when. And then from that framework, we can just work off it. And normally we're pretty strict with it, but having that framework allows us to, you know, maneuver from that as we see, you know, as things crop up, as, you know, injuries, whatever it may happen. But it's certainly a really good plan for us to stick to throughout the week.
It's, I mean, the level of detail that obviously goes into that is sounds phenomenal. And then when you're then starting to sort of take that out to the players, how much of it is group work? How much of it, if it is one-to-one sort of communication? How does it, how do you present, what are the different ways that you present this stuff to your playing squad?
There's no set way. Everything's contextual. It's you might just feel that you've got a group, or you're going through a period where there's not a lot of communication in the meetings, and you're asking some questions, and maybe there's not a lot of strong characters or big characters, or some are afraid to talk. So then you have to then adapt and feel like, okay, now what we're gonna have to do this week is bring them either in individually or in their units, and in a more informal environment. So instead of going in the big meeting room where it's more official, we can bring them in our office, or maybe we'll go somewhere else, and just to encourage a little bit more communication and togetherness and understanding about what we're after for the game. And then obviously it's the same with individuals. I think it really is all contextual. Like, some players, full of confidence, and having some good games, you can talk to them in a certain setting or environment in front of players, whatever. There's some players might be going through a bad time that you really need to just maybe protect a bit and bring them in the office. But certainly, I think that's probably the beauty of the job. It's that's really the art of the job. It's having a feel every week that where the team's at. You have your processes, you have your really structured way of working, which you don't veer too much away from. But week to week, day to day, you're just feeling the climate of the locker room. And you're adapting from there to make sure you get the best out of the players, and you really get the understanding of what you're trying to get across. You get that even more stronger. So really, that is it. You have your template, you have your framework, but then within that, you have to coach the moment, coach the context as it goes along.
I like the sound of that. So when you when you're in between these games, I mean, the amount of stuff that you're trying to get in, I suppose, in between each fixture is incredible. So how do you then go about getting that balance between, as you say, sort of reviewing the stuff from the previous game and trying to correct or even repeat some of the good stuff? Because that's one thing about analysis that I think it tends to come up a lot, is that there's a mindset around analysis that it's normally looking for the mistakes, looking for the areas of improvement and stuff like that. And of course, that's going to be a certain part of it. But I presume also that you're looking for good patterns that you can show to people to repeat them, because people like seeing stuff that they've done well, and they see it, they're more likely to want to repeat that in the future as well. How do you get that balance between looking back, but then flipping over to then sort of looking to the next game as well?
Well, again, that's the art of coaching. And I think you have to really feel the environment and yourself have a balance of that. You need staff to be able, you need to trust your staff to be able to point things out to you. If you tend to be going strongly down one way, or you're thinking of going down one way, then that's where you need good staff to be able to point things out to you, to maybe help you. If you're really going strong in one direction and maybe you need a little bit more balance, that's where your staff come into play. But also, just getting creative. There's so many different ways to present information that's just subtle, and that's not having to call a meeting. You can have things running, in the breakfast room in the morning, just on the loop, all the positive clips, or you can have just a really positive video that's 2 minutes long that's sent to the player's individual phone. You can have, when they come in the changing rooms, you can have something playing in there, just little messages, just little, just reminders that just reinforce the good habits that you're after. So I think if you're creative, there are so many different ways. I think you don't have to call official meetings all the time. You can pull a player in and just for 30 seconds show him something. And so I think the key is, once you get all your analysis, once you've had all your reviewing and your analysis of your next opposition, and you come up with your game plan and you have your whole template out and you have all your key things that you need to get across as a team, as individuals, all these different things you have to get across. Then once you have that framework, then you're able to any time or any moment, if a player's walking past down the corridor, you can pull him in. You've always got something to work from and work off. So I think, that really is the art of coaching.
No, definitely. So when you're then doing you're doing your analysis with them. So you're coming up with the final game plan. What sort of things are you looking for in terms of the opposition, and how many tweaks to your sort of initial tactical framework would you say you end up making on average for the opposition, or are you very much a coach that sort of puts his game plan onto the opposition first and foremost?
I think when you're, again, it all comes back to coaching you, the context you're working in. I think ideally we'd all, Pep's one of the most amazing coaches in the world. And I think if you look at, when he came to Man City, Pep's got a really clear way of playing. And I think, after his first year, it probably wasn't as successful as ever since then, his first year. But after that first year, I think he made some changes to personnel, and and I think he really got players in that could execute the way he wants his team to play. Well, unless you're able to do that, then I think you have to adapt, and you have to really respect the opposition, and you have to be a lot more prepared and organized and tactical, so to speak. So I think it's just finding the balance. And I think from my experience, we want to stick to our principles. We have a way of playing. But within that, game to game, especially defensively, there are certain things that we don't have to lose our principles about how we want to defend, but we can adjust certain things that mean that we target certain players or we defend certain areas a little bit more, a little bit stronger, or a little bit with a little bit more alertness. So I think definitely we would adapt certain parts, but we would never really veer from our overall principles of how we want to play. But at the same time, we don't go out there and say we're just going to play how we want to play, irrespective of who we're playing against. Because I think if you do that, and if you haven't got the best, talent and resources, I think you could struggle.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I like how you keep coming back to context of everything, because everything is changing all the time, and each situation is going to be slightly different. One thing I'd like to ask you about, Anthony, is about the building of a department, because again, each club's going to be different. And I suppose you have an ideal situation where you'd be able to go and get this analyst, this coach, this, and this. And then there'll be other situations where you have to work with different constraints. How do you go about building the right department for you to be able to sort of create the environment you want in a particular role?
Again, I think this is always evolving as a coach, as a manager. Firstly, as a coach yourself, you evolve. And I think as you get more experience, you're able to see things differently, which means then the type of people you have around you becomes different. You become less involved in everything and less... you're able to take a step back and empower people to take on different roles and to do their job. So I think that's the biggest part. As you evolve as a manager, the way your staff is set up changes. Look, I think I'll say this, I've always said it, the biggest thing for me, certainly an assistant coach and staff, but certainly an assistant, is trust. I mean, trust is such an important thing in football, because as we know, it's such a turbulent and cutthroat industry. I think you have to have people that you really trust and support. So in the bad moments, because the role of the head coach is so isolating, and you need someone that you trust, and you need someone to tell you the truth, and you need someone that's got your back. So I think the starting point would always be for me that. Then within the staff, you need people that are strong, strong characters that are strong enough to give you their opinion without worrying about upsetting you. You need strong characters to be able to voice that opinion in the changing rooms around the players. And I always believe that you need people that are, you know, have different qualities and bring different things to the table. And then as you grow and the type of job you're in, you're able then to add more expertise to your staff. And I think from where I was, you know, back in Newport, certainly in when I started in the USA, I did everything myself. I mean, I did all my analysis myself. I remember me and my assistant, we did everything. And then suddenly, and I think that held me in really good standing, because doing all your own analysis and game preparation and, you know, when I got my first analysis analyst, you know, I probably knew as much as him and I could execute things as quick as him, and I knew exactly what I wanted and when I wanted it and how I wanted it. And I think that's been the way ever since. So then, you know, as you develop as a coach and you're able to add more to your staff, you know, the more expertise. I think the key thing for me is having a group of staff that are all on the same page, all have the same objectives in terms of what they want to achieve. And as I say with the team, you know, the team is far, far more important than the individual of a team. And that goes the same for the staff. And I think the staff have to represent that as much as the players do. And I think if the players see a staff that aren't pulling in the same direction, or that aren't a team, that are strong, you know, stronger as a collective, then I think that becomes something that in, you know, culturally in your environment, it's not a positive in your environment. So that's certainly the biggest thing. But with regard to assistant coaches, I think trust is one of the biggest things.
I think that's certainly something that was ringing true in all the conversations that I've had throughout doing this podcast is around that sort of side of it. And one thing I have sort of noticed a lot in the last sort of 6 months, though, is the increased importance of the analyst in that management group, and again the trust levels in there. And when I was speaking to Ben, who was at Southend, now with Millwall, he was talking about how his sort of process of being an analyst and gaining the trust of the new manager when a new manager would come in, and that sort of side of it is fascinating how the trust side sort of has to come both ways as well, really, because the staff need to trust the leader, and the leader needs to trust the staff, and so on and so forth. So it's fascinating to hear how that environment gets built. So Anthony, for you now then, so what's next for you, do you believe?
Well, for me, I'm now in a position where this is probably the first time I've been sacked as a manager in quite some years. So I think the first thing that I've done is just reviewed and reflected and just looked at everything, you know, ruthlessly, to try and figure out why and what happened, and really to take things, you know, to really improve and prepare for the next role. And I think since I've left my job in the MLS, I've had you know, a couple of opportunities, you know, and they probably weren't, you know, either the right timing or the right job for me. So in the meantime, all I've been doing is visiting coaches, you know, seeing other coaches work, watching other codes, you know, having watched a couple of American football teams, you know, work and coaches train, you know, really refining my own philosophy. And which, you know, you said at the beginning of the call, you're so glad the season started. I mean, so am I. I mean, there's so many, you know, styles of play and coaches working I really want to look at, and certain principles about the game that I really want to get clear on, in, you know, in terms of, you know, I'm just really curious about, because there's so many, you know, you come to MLS, for example. MLS is a league where it's very different. You know, I probably learned within 6 months of the job, I learned that actually there's some really key things that you need for this league. It's a, you know, for those of you who know it, it's a league where all the money in the marquee, they call it the DP money, is spent in attacking players. you know, and you have players in the league that, you know, quite a few can play in the Premier League. That's the quality of them. And then you have the rest of the money is invested, you know, into other areas of the pitch, but but it's not where the large amount of money is going to. So you have such a gulf in class, really, in terms of the two positions, and you start to understand after a certain amount of time that to then deal with those top quality players, you need certain characteristics, whether it be pace, whether it be speed, athleticism, all these things. So it's such a different league, MLS, and there's lots of different rules. So I think using this time now to really study, you know, look at trends in MLS, look at trends in England, what wins, all these different things. So it's been a really productive time, and I'm just looking forward to my next opportunity.
So what would you say the biggest learning that is that you've come across, and that can be from like the from the previous role or from your the research that you've been doing over the last sort of bit of time?
Well, I think recruitment is, you know, we hear this all the time with managers, and it's, you know, it's on every talk show every single week. I think recruitment's everything. And I think, you know, I've as an international manager, you know, you have the luxury of going into, you know, I've gone into two different environments now, culturally completely, you know, an extreme, you know, the Middle East, and then over to New Zealand, which culturally is very strong but very different than any other country. But the difference with an international manager is that after your first tour, if players are not in line with exactly the type of team you see, the team you want to build, you know, whether it be as a character or playing as a characteristic as a player, if they're not the right fit, well, it's very easy just to not select them for the next camp. Whereas, and then from that point, you really have full control of building and shaping your team. Whereas in a club, it's not like that. And you have to, you know, when you're recruiting players, you know, signing players, they're on longer term contracts. You know, these are things that are very different from international football. But certainly I think the recruitment side of it is so important. I think you need a recruitment team, you know, you need your scouting team and your coaches to be so aligned and so clear about players that suit the way the club wants to, you know, the manager and the club and the direction the club wants to go, so aligned and on the same page of exactly what that looks like and the type of characteristics as a player and as a person you need. You know, I think that is probably one of the most important things. And with that, you know, understanding really key principles about the league that you're in, and understanding that for certain positions and roles, for teams to be successful in a certain league, there are certain non-negotiables that you need from a recruitment standpoint in terms of players. So that's probably the biggest thing that, you know, the biggest thing that stands out, you know, as a takeaway.
No, it's interesting you say that. I mean, I was talking to a European scout for a mid-table Premier League side, shall we say, without giving any names away, last season. And he was saying the amount of information his manager wants him to get on every single player and the characteristics and all the attributes that they're looking for on a role by role sort of situation makes it incredibly difficult to actually find a player. But then the testament to the process is the fact that it would be very difficult to say that the club in question has made too many bad signings in the last 4 years. And their sort of their growth is sort of stands the test of time with that. So I know the recruitment side of it is a fascinating area. And again, as you said earlier in the conversation, there is so much information and so many tools out there now, and sort of the getting the right blend between sort of face to face, video, statistics, data, all that side of it makes it an incredibly fascinating subject, which is probably another podcast in itself, let alone in this one.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, no, it's such an important part of the game. The most important part of the game.
Well, I can't remember who it was, but somebody said something along the lines, if you can throw tactics in the bin, it's players that win you football matches. I don't think our magazine could completely go along with that phrase, because we'd probably do ourselves out of our distribution list, but there's probably a lot of truth in that as well.
Well, look, I just to finish on this, I think if you, it would be demoralizing for coaches to just come to the realization that actually it's all dependent on the quality of players. So if you've got good players, then you win. If you haven't, then you've got no chance. But I think this is key. Obviously, good players, you know, the better players you can get, quality players are going to help you win more matches than not. If you don't have the most amount of resources to go and get the best players, well, then I believe the sum of the whole has to be far more important than any individual, and all the little one percenters you have to be better than the opposition at. And when you have a style of play, or your club have a way of doing things, and you haven't got the most amount of resources, well then, as a staff, you have to be so aligned in the type of players that you want to bring in to fit that system. So you're just efficient at everything you do when it comes to recruitment, when it comes to articulating your playing style, when it comes to coaching it, when it comes to reviewing it, when it comes to culture, when it comes to accountability, all these things you have to be efficient, and you have to be the best at. So yeah, of course, the better players you can get, the more successful you have a chance of being. If you don't have the resources, then you have to be so efficient at everything else.
Superb. I think that's an absolutely fantastic way to, or a great point to finish off for today's podcast. Anthony, thanks ever so much for giving up your time today. It's been a really good chat, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. If people want to sort of keep an eye on you, I'm presuming you're on social media. You may not be, but if they are, is there anywhere they can follow you?
I am. Yeah, I have an Instagram account, anthonyhudson.official, and it's something that, it's another thing with coaches. I've never really been into it. I've been reluctant to get on it. I've never really done Twitter, but I did this. I still people have told me to, you know, I need to engage in it. I think one thing's important. You know, you always want to find a better way to connect with the fans and communicate to the fans. So that's hopefully something that I can use it for. And again, we haven't spoke about that with coaching, but certainly the you know, social media and communications is a massive part of a coach's world now. So yeah, that's my Instagram, and that's the address.
Wonderful stuff. Okay, great. Well, look, guys, thanks ever so much for listening today to today's Total Football Analysis Magazine podcast. If you want to, I'm presuming you found our website, otherwise how would you have found the podcast? But if you haven't, it's totalfootballanalysis.com. And we do have a monthly digital magazine that goes out, funnily enough, monthly, where you'll be able to find all the latest match analysis, scout reports, and sort of thought sort of pieces on all things tactical analysis. Anthony, once again, thank you very much for your time today, and I hope we can do this again sometime in the future.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chris. All the best.